Genesis 41, verses 34 to 36, we find here the explanation that Joseph gave to Pharaoh about how he should handle the coming 7 years of plenty to be followed by the 7 years of famine. He says that everyone should give one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 plentiful years. And that was more or less, however you want to describe it, I look at it as a tax, if you will. A reserve that the government set aside to get the people through the 7 years of famine. One-fifth or 20%. Now I need a couple of volunteers. One from over here. And whoever volunteers on this side gets to be Pharaoh. So you know, there should be a There's a basket right behind you right there. Now, I just need an ordinary farmer from over here. Whoever wants to jump up and come right on up. Whoever wants to be the farmer. Okay, thank you. We have a farmer. Okay, well, the young lady's going to be the farmer. Okay. Now, you have a basket right here. I need you to come on up on the stage. And both of you, if you would, just step up on the stage. May you pick up your basket. Okay. So what Joseph was proposing is that every year the farmer's produce came in, the 20% went to Pharaoh. So there are 10 golf balls in this basket. I'm taking two out, which would be 20% or one-fifth. And that goes to Pharaoh. Now, we don't know how many bushels, or whatever you want to use to measure the grain. So we don't know how many hundreds of thousands of bushels or boxcars full or whatever. I don't know what that total is, but I know that 20% went to Pharaoh, and I also know that 20% saved over 7 years will be enough to carry the people through the 7 years of famine. So every year, the farmer puts two more. You got to keep count of those. Puts two more in the basket. How many years have we got so far? 4 years so far? Five. Six. In 7 years, how many measures of grain do you have? 14. 2 years times seven. He has 14. That 14, or 140%, will feed the people or supply their need through 7 years of famine. Therefore, it's logical to assume that it takes 20% of those bountiful years to feed the farmer and the rest of the Egyptians during those first few years of famine. So we're going to take two out to represent the two that the farmer and the people eat during the 7 years of plenty. So in any one year, we now have how many left? Six. We've given two to Pharaoh, and you have eaten two. You have six left. Now, let's just suppose that we're going to take two more out, because if they're going to be able to save up their grain for the famine, that they got to build some barns. And, by the way, there's a huge surplus of grain, so prices have went way down, so we'll deduct some for that. So we'll take two more out, which means... I got golf balls going everywhere. Which means that in any one of those 7 years, the farmer has four left at his disposal. 2 years worth of provision. What's four times seven? 28. That's right. You got it. Twice as many as Pharaoh needed. to supply the whole country. Yet, when we come to our text today, in chapter 47, verse 13, we find that the people, the farmers and the rest of the people, are running to Pharaoh saying, "Help me, help me. What happened to all this surplus?" Let's go a little further in chapter 41 before we get to our text for this morning. Verse 47 says, "Now in the seven plentiful years, the ground brought forth abundantly." So whatever those 10 were to start with, it was a lot. Joseph gathered very much grain. This is during the plentiful years. He gathered very much grain as the sand of the sea until he stopped counting, for it was immeasurable. It was a bunch of grain. It was the mother load of all crops for 7 years. Every Egyptian farmer just hit the lottery every year for 7 years. That's how much grain came to them in that 7 years. So what did the farmers do with all that surplus they had? They should have had double what they needed if they would have saved it, even after building barns and consuming what they did, and even if you take away some for reseeding. But there wasn't really going to be any reseeding for 7 years. So what are they doing? Buying gold-plated chariots? Having parties? Building bigger houses? They get it into the famine hardly any time at all, and they're running over here saying, "Joseph, we need a little help." They should have had double what Pharaoh had. Okay, thank you. You guys have been wonderful. I didn't have to put anybody on a leash or anything. And oh, careful. All right, thank you so much. Obviously, the farmers, the people, were guilty of poor management, short-sightedness. They probably overspent and they didn't save. Does that sound like anybody we know? Most people probably, when you think about it. I mean, we're all guilty at some level of some of that, in spite of all the blessings God has given us. Well, but Joseph over here working for Pharaoh, when he gets to the end of that 7 years of plenty, he's got 14 measures, 140%. Takes out 20% a year to feed the people. He gets through the famine. So Joseph's plan was full of foresight. His plan was a model of stewardship. He exercised wisdom and judgment, self-restraint, self-discipline. So when the time came, he had enough. Everything that they didn't do, that they should have done. It hadn't have been for Joseph and his plan. Where would they have been? They wouldn't have been, I guess, is the answer to that. Joseph was able to provide for the people of Egypt, and more importantly, because of God's providence, more importantly than the Egyptians, he was able to provide for his father and his brothers and to rescue and save the nation of Israel in accordance with the plan of God and the promises made all the way back to Abraham, which were unconditional. Now, why was it that Joseph was able to thrive in his work when seemingly everybody else failed? Now, I'm not saying everybody did. There may have been some that saved and didn't need government help and so on, but the majority, the vast majority didn't. Why was it that Joseph thrived at the work in the work that God gave him to do and so many others failed? Well, to a large degree, I believe it simply had to do with what the perspective was. And Joseph's perspective was a godly one. It was a spiritual perspective. You know, we tend to consider our work a secular matter, don't we? I mean, how many of us get up on Sunday morning and say, "Praise God, I get to go serve the Lord today"? Now, it's just probably that thought is probably just not there. We think of our work in secular terms, a necessary evil, if you will. And the workplace we go to, the world we live in, seems to be governed by the world's rules. But the scripture says, Paul said, whether you eat or drink or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. You realize that 25% of your life is going to be spent working? Pretty much 25% is going to go to your work. That's about one-third of your waking hours you're going to be spending at work. God's desire is that we utilize this vast amount of time that goes into our daily work to glorify Him. He tells us we got to redeem the time in Ephesians 5:16. Here's some time. Here's a big chunk of time we do not often redeem. So why did Joseph thrive at his work? And by the way, he thrived before in the prison too, didn't he? And he thrived before that in Potiphar's house, didn't he? And he really was thriving before that back in the promised land before he was sold. Why did Joseph always rise to the top? Why? His perspective, I think, was different than most people. He is therefore a great example of someone who glorified God in all their life, including their work life, and that's what we're going to look at today. He gives us some very specific examples we want to look at in chapter 47. And we're going to begin at verse 13 in chapter 47 this morning, if you want to turn there. And what we are noticing is this, that we have an obligation to glorify God at work, in our work. We have an obligation to glorify God whatever we do. But let's look at this matter of our work life this morning. How do we go about bringing glory to God 5 days a week? How do we thrive as a believer, as a Christian should, 9 to 5? Here are the principles. Here's the answer. Three short principles we're going to see in Joseph's life. Number one, be loyal to your employer. Now, these principles are so basic that if I just sent out a survey this morning, or if I just told you to take a blank sheet of paper and write down the top three things you need to know about doing well at work and doing what you should as a believer, you probably get these. Most of you would probably get these three somewhere if we took any time at all to think it through. There's nothing deep about this information. Other than we don't think about it. We just slide into the world's way of thinking and the world's way of doing things when we go off on Monday morning. The first thing we have to remember, if we're going to thrive, if we're going to be in the grace of God, or His good graces, if we are going to glorify Him, we've got to be loyal to our employer. Look at chapter 47 now at verse 13. Now there was no bread in all the land. Okay, the famine is upon them now. There was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very severe, so that the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan languished because of the famine. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan for the grain which they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. Now, first of all, notice that the people here in verse 14, they're already out of their grain. They could have saved up plenty. They've squandered it somehow. Or at least a large portion of them has. Or maybe they just didn't even bother to harvest it all in those years of plenty. I don't know. There's much we don't know, but there is a real discrepancy here between what Joseph did for Pharaoh and what they did. And in verse 14, he says, Joseph gathered up all the money. Well, what's happening is they have no grain. It's all gone. Their basket is empty over here. And so they go to Joseph, who represents Pharaoh, and says, remember that grain you're storing up? We need some. And Joseph says, okay, here's the price. Now, before you think for a moment, or before you're tempted to think that Joseph somehow was being unfair, that Pharaoh took it away from them and then turned around and charged them for it, you think about it for a minute. Pharaoh is the sovereign. He's the boss. He's the one that Joseph works for. And being the Pharaoh, he had a right to tax the people. We're even told in the Bible in Romans chapter 13, 1, that we as Christians are always supposed to render tribute to whom tribute is due. That's talking about paying our taxes to the government authorities. There was nothing wrong with Pharaoh taxing the people. By the way, the tax, it may have been others, but this tax was for their good in the long run anyhow. But once it was taxed, it's in the national treasury. It doesn't belong to the people anymore. And Pharaoh wasn't into conducting a welfare program. Joseph had no thought of socialism. This is not a socialistic program. This is not an entitlement at all. They had to buy it off of Pharaoh. And so they did. And they bought it, and they bought it until their money ran out. And they're still in the midst of the famine. And it says, Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan. Except for his father's money, by the way, and his brother's money. Because remember, he did not allow them to become impoverished. He bought their grain and sent it to them. Everybody else, the money's all in. And what does Joseph do with it? Well, he sticks some in his pocket. No. It doesn't say that, does it? Oh, that's what a lot of politicians may have been tempted to do. Well, they'd all would be tempted to do, probably. But a lot of politicians, especially those in this setting, would have said, you know, okay, you got all this money. Pharaoh won't miss this. I'll put it back here in my pocket. I'll give Pharaoh the rest. No, he brought all the money to Pharaoh because Joseph was absolutely 100% loyal. He was loyal to his employer. If it hadn't been for Pharaoh, he wouldn't be where he's at. Hadn't been for Pharaoh, he wouldn't be out of, you can say the same ultimately and more importantly of God. But Pharaoh figured into the plan and the working of God. So he's going to be loyal to Pharaoh. That's his position, and that's what he does. That means that he works for his employer's gain. Drop down to verse 19 for a moment. Why should we die, say the people, before your eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land. So he not only purchased the grain from Pharaoh, but they ran out of that, and they come back and say, we don't have any money to buy anything more with. So Pharaoh gave them grain anyway, but he gave it as a medium of exchange, purchasing back from them their land. And we'll come to it a little bit later. He also bought their livestock prior to that. And as we saw in this verse we just read, he ultimately bought them, and they became his servants. That was the grain going back to them when they had nothing to exchange for it but those things. You say, that's pretty harsh. People didn't have anything. Pharaoh had everything. But the point is, Joseph wasn't working for the people. Joseph was working for Pharaoh. And by the way, we're going to find out it wasn't so harsh to the people as we get further on into this. But that will be enough here to say at this point. It's amazing how these guys over here were so needy so quickly and to such an extent. God had just poured out upon them, opened the windows of heaven on them with his blessing. And they couldn't handle it. Let me read you a statement. It's not about something that happened in ancient Egypt, but something that happens in America all the time. The man who is making this statement, his name is Robert Thompson. He's the president of Sage Financial Design, a Connecticut-based company. And this company serves clients who are millionaires. In particular, a lot of millionaires who become millionaires because they win the lottery. President of a company who tries to handle the money and serve people that win the lottery, that have a lot of excess. Listen to this statement. He says, the rule of thumb we use is sudden wealth will ruin people in 3 to 5 years. Sudden wealth, he says, will ruin people in 3 to 5 years. He goes on. He says, at the end of 5 years, the money's going to be gone, or the human being is going to be gone. They either lose their money or themselves or both. Next time you dream of winning the lottery, keep that in mind. You say, oh, that wouldn't be my case. Well, the whole population of Egypt thought that too, before they squandered what they had. Most people can't handle the obligation of managing excess wealth. Was Joseph working for the right person? Yes. Well, he was the one in authority, obviously. But somehow Pharaoh had enough sense to say, Joseph can handle this, and put him in charge. Not only did Joseph work for the Pharaoh, he submitted to the Pharaoh's authority in all matters as well. But let's move on to number two, the second principle. Be fair and honest with everyone. Okay, at your work, you have an obligation. We all have an obligation at our work to be loyal to our employer, number one. By the way, that means do a good job and make the most money for your employer as you can. And don't sit around and do nothing, waste time, and be an unprofitable employee. Christians should be hardworking, loyal employees in every manner. Then we also at work need to be fair and honest with everyone. Fair and honest with everyone. I don't see a lot of this yet with Joseph. Well, let me show you some. Okay? Verse 15, where we left off. So when the money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, give us bread, for why should we die in the presence? For the money has failed. Notice, when their money ran out, they couldn't buy any grain from Pharaoh. They come to Joseph and said, give us something to eat. They're begging. I said before, and I'll say it again, Joseph and Pharaoh were not in the entitlement business. They weren't interested in welfare. I'm not rendering any moral judgments on that at all. I'm just telling you what the situation was. So, they have no money. They need food. They're asking that it be given to them. What's the response? Then Joseph said, give your livestock, and I will give you bread. For your livestock, if the money is gone. So they brought their livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for the horses and flocks and the cattle of the herds and for the donkeys. And he fed them with bread in exchange for all the livestock that year. So they brought all their livestock. That, by the way, that was a very important asset in that time. It was an agrarian economy. They used these animals to produce food. Well, it's a famine. You can't use it. Well, what good's an oxen in the famine, you know? So Joseph buys all the livestock for Pharaoh, and he gives them grain. Fair exchange, that's all it was. Simple marketplace transaction. But think about it. If Joseph hadn't done that, those animals would have died anyway. Because how are the people going to feed their animals? They can't feed themselves. If Joseph hadn't bought the livestock and fed the livestock would have died anyway. Worse than that, if Joseph hadn't bought the livestock for the grain, the people would have died. So he's pretty merciful, pretty thoughtful, an understanding of the situation when you think about it. So they brought their livestock, verse 17, to Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange. And for a whole year, I don't know if it was a second year or a year, a half a year in, we don't know exact dates here. Verse 18. And when that year had ended, they came to him the next year and said to him, we will not hide from my lord that our money is gone. My lord also has our herds of livestock. There is nothing left in the sight of my lord but our bodies and our lands. Now, the first time they came to Joseph, they said, give us grain. Well, they found out that wasn't going to work. Joseph said, I'll buy your livestock. By the way, that preserved the people's self-worth, did it not? Versus being beggars. This time the people come to Joseph, and it's their idea. It's their idea. Hey, buy our land. Excuse me. Buy us. We'll become your servants. People's idea. Joseph didn't force that on them. Joseph had taught them a lesson, though. This time they knew what the transaction was going to be. It was going to be something. It was going to cost them something. It was going to cost them something, and they knew well they had squandered a whole lot more than that. They didn't deserve anything. You know, what they deserved was Pharaoh to say, "You had double what I have. Go away and die." That's what they deserve. But Joseph is being merciful to them. He's helping to preserve their self-worth. And so Pharaoh buys their land, and he buys them. They become the servants of Pharaoh. Now listen, look at this. We're going to skip a few verses, but go down to verse 23. After this transaction is made, and this gets them through the famine, verse 23, then Joseph said to the people, "I have bought you and your land this day for Pharaoh." Notice who he's working for. He's still loyal to his boss. He said, "I bought you and I bought your land this day for Pharaoh. Look, here is seed for you, and you shall sow the land. And it shall come to pass in the harvest that you shall give one-fifth to Pharaoh, four-fifths shall be your own, as the seed of the field, and for your food and for those households." Wait a minute. That's the same deal they had before the famine. Serving Pharaoh wasn't such a bad deal, was it? When they were full and free, Pharaoh taxed them 20%. Now they belong to Pharaoh, and they work on Pharaoh's land, and they use Pharaoh's livestock and all the rest. And how much do they get to keep? 80%. Just like they were keeping when they did not live as, a servant of Pharaoh. They were free, in a sense. They're more free. That's a pretty good deal. Joseph is pretty merciful to the people, wasn't he? Merciful and understanding and caring and honest and fair with them. At the same time, completely loyal to his boss. Pretty amazing when you think about it. Principle number 3, be dedicated to your work. I want to run through this quickly, so you might want to jot down these verses. Joseph was a hard worker. He was dedicated to what he had to do and what his job was. And yes, he delegated parts of it, no doubt. But notice some things here about Joseph. First of all, he showed up for work. Every time they had a problem, where'd they go? Joseph. Every time the people had a problem, who'd they know could handle it? Joseph. Who was on duty? Joseph. Who was at work that day? Joseph. Verse 15, he was available. In verse 14, verse 21, and verse 23, he took responsibility for the situation. And in verses 16 to 20 and verses 23 to 26, we see he solved the problem. So Joseph showed up. You know, we would have a whole lot more financial blessing in this country if more people showed up for work. Now, I'm not saying you should go to work if you're sick and you're going to make other people sick or whatever. You know, I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. Some people are there and they haven't showed up. So show up, number one. Number two, get your hands dirty. Get your hands dirty. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean, Joseph did whatever was necessary. Think about this. He was a salesman in verse 14. He was an investor in verse 16. He sold them wheat for money. That's a salesman, verse 14. He became an investor when he began to buy the livestock and the land, verse 16, and also verses 18 to 20. He ultimately ended up being their employer because he bought them all for Pharaoh, verse 18. And he had authority from Pharaoh all along, and we especially see it in verses 23 to 26. He was also a ruler. Whatever Joseph needed to do, Joseph did. Whatever Joseph needed to do, he did. He rolled up his sleeves, and he jumped into the work, and he saw it through. There's a lot of people that can start. There's also a lot of people can't never seem to finish. So show up, number one. Number two, get your hands dirty. Number three, use your head. In verse 16, Joseph thought of a way out of the problem. Hey, I'll buy your livestock. In verse 21, it says he moved all the people in the rural areas, he moved them to the cities. Why? Because that's where Pharaoh had stored the grain. He said, we've got a distribution problem, and we've got a transportation problem. It's easier to move the people and let them move themselves closer to where the grain is than for us to try to take the grain and move it to where they are. Joseph was a man of wisdom and thought in everything that he did. And then finally, in the feudal-like system that he comes up with the people being the servants of Pharaoh, working on the land of Pharaoh, with the livestock of Pharaoh, he's used his head there too, because he's completely loyal to his employer. He's completely fair to the people. And it's interesting, the people don't complain about this. Look what the people say. So verse 25, so they said, "You have saved our lives. Let us find favor in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servant." They were happy. They were especially happy because they had the same deal they had before. Pharaoh's only taken 20% for their share. They became sharecroppers, so to speak. Now, these are simple principles to put into place in your work life. And we see Joseph as a tremendous example of what we should be in glorifying God at work. But there's something I just want to wind up with here that goes beyond that. Joseph did all of this in God's providence to save the nation of Israel. All I'm saying is that in your life and my life, what seems like mundane, everyday, ho-hum, at the grindstone work, really fits into a bigger picture. We don't always know what that is, but we do know that God's in control, and God will utilize our effort, given for His glory, to do great things and to bless many people. And we have to keep that in mind.